That's a funky little tune. You know, for people who maybe weren't listening yesterday, Tom is sporting just a mustache. He's got that Paul Snyder thing going on.
We're on day four.
Yeah, and your girlfriend not happy.
Yeah, she hasn't left me yet, so that's good.
That's good.
But I did throw out some opinions. I took some photos, sent it to some friends.
Yeah.
Mostly thumbs up.
And just the stash.
Just the stash.
Yeah.
I've been told that I'm pulling it off, so we'll keep that theme rolling for a while.
That's my producer, Tom Hush. I'm Nick DiGilio. We talk with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter every couple of weeks to talk TV. He's a TV critic. You can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's say hello. Dan, how are you doing?
I am doing okay. How are you doing, Nick?
You know, the best you can be in this situation. So it's very weird. It's very weird times right now, Dan, as you are quite aware.
Strange days indeed. Strange days in which everybody is just sitting at home on their couches watching TV all the time. We've become a nation of TV critics, and thus I am significantly less special, tragically.
Now, before we get into some of the reviews that you did and some of the posts that you put up on The Fine Print and The Hollywood Reporter, are there any, do you suggest, because people, as you just said, people are stuck in their houses, they have to stay at home, they have to stay in their apartments. Is there anything that's really fun to binge watch at a time like this? What would you recommend?
Fun to binge watch. That's just a tough extra phrase. I don't know. I mean, this week what I'm telling everyone that they need to be binge watching, and I believe I mentioned this when I was last on, is it's really time for everybody to just suck it up and watch three seasons of Brockmire on Hulu so that they can watch the final season on IFC, which premiered last night, tonight, Wednesday, whenever it premiered. So
yeah.
That's the thing I'm telling people is genuinely fun. Now, it's not a show that you can really watch if your kids are underfoot and you don't want them learning scandalous words or about baseball. But otherwise, it is such a funny show and such a show full of big heart. And so many of the shows that I might be prone to otherwise recommend are sort of probably dark and depressing shows, because, I mean, that's just what peak TV and prestige TV largely is sometimes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, everyone just needs to watch Brockmire.
Okay, there you go. You know, and I'm one of those people, as you know. You've scolded me in the past.
but it's not working, Nick.
Now,
so what do I need to do?
I'll begin watching it. It's on Hulu, you said, right? The first three seasons?
The first three seasons are on Hulu. The last season just premiered this week, and the seasons are 8 episodes apiece. Rarely are episodes longer than 21 or 22 minutes, so it's a morning. You could just take a morning and then watch you some Brockmire, and you'll be amused, you'll laugh. Maybe you'll feel a little emotion here and there, but you'll definitely be very happy with what Hank Azaria and Amanda Peet and just a really great cast are doing. It is such a smart, good, funny show that ultimately is a fairly big-hearted show, and so, you know, given that the fourth season is premiering this week, that is the thing I am hyping up. Not that there aren't 1,000 other great things that people could surely be catching up on.
So, since we're talking about Brockmire, you did review season 4 on The Fine Print at The Hollywood Reporter, and it's basically about a foul-mouthed baseball announcer. That's what the quickest. So how's season 4? Is it great?
Season 4 is terrific. It is a large deviation from the previous seasons. This is a show that has just evolved as it's gone along, because it started off as a sketch character, as a Funny or Die sketch character, and there's no reason why it should have been good enough to sustain even a full season of that. And part of how it sustained that is by becoming a bigger and bigger-hearted show. And the fourth season takes a 15-year jump into a semi-dystopic future.
What?
Which, see, these are strange things that they can do on Brockmire. The season jumps forward into the 2030s, and baseball has become so unpopular in this dystopic future, where there is water rationing, where basically the country has fallen into civil war, where there is was frankly at some point a pandemic that swept through the country, so maybe a little too close to home on that front. But that's a small part of it. And the only solution that the powers that be have is to try to put Brockmeyer in charge of saving baseball. And so that is,
wow,
that is where the fourth season takes things. But yeah, and so this show that has been a wacky foul-mouthed baseball comedy all of these years, in its fourth season, it is also a very sharp social satire. In my review, I compared it to Idiocracy. I compared it to Kurt Vonnegut. And I think that those are fair comparisons to what this fourth season is doing. I think it definitely helps to have gone through the first three seasons so that you kind of buy into the leap that they're taking in this fourth season. But now you have something to look forward to if those are keywords that interest you.
Yeah, all of that, everything you said interests me. That's amazing. That's amazing. And I'm, you know, obviously Hank Azaria is like a national treasure as far as I'm concerned. I just think he's great.
And I will say this again, as I said in my review, this is the best performance he's ever given. It is every bit as effective and dramatic as the performances he gave in Huff and in Quiz Show and anytime he's done dramatic work, because he's a very good dramatic actor when he's given the chance to be. And it is every bit as funny and wacky and broad as something like Birdcage or any of the time, or, you know, Mad About You, any of the times he's done really hilarious comedic roles. It is kind of, it is a career summation kind of role, and he's never been better. Amanda Peet has never been better. It's just a really great show, and it's a show that I always quite enjoyed, but I've just found myself liking it more and more and more as it has gone along.
That's great. Okay, so Brockmeyer, the first three seasons are streaming on Hulu if you want to catch up, and a lot of people are going to be stuck in their houses. Watch some Brockmeyer, and then season four just premiered, and that's on IFC. Okay, Dan, hold on.
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us. He joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. It's a Thursday. It's a Thursday. It's Nick DiGilio here, and Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Joins us every couple of weeks. You can follow him on The Fine Print, at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And Dan, we're here.
Indeed,
okay.
We are.
A couple of texts that have come in. Perhaps you can help out here. 773 area code says, when do new episodes of Little Fires Everywhere come out?
Little Fires Everywhere, which premiered its first three episodes either Wednesday or technically, I guess, they snuck them onto Hulu the day before on Tuesday, those first three episodes. But Wednesday is the day that episodes will actually be coming out. And so basically the first three on premiere day and then subsequently
on Wednesdays. Okay. And what is Little Fires Everywhere for people who might not know?
Little Fires Everywhere is an adaptation of the very popular novel, and it is the latest time that we've been shocked that Reese Witherspoon is doing television, though at a certain point we're just going to be like, my God, does Reese Witherspoon ever stop doing television? She's pretty much all around. I mean, this is literally her third television series in 7 months,
yeah.
8 months.
Yeah,
Big Little Lies morning show and this. That's a lot of Reese Witherspoon on my TV. So anyway, it is set in the late 90s in Shaker Heights, Ohio, and it is the story of basically a parenting clash between two very single-minded women played by Reese Witherspoon and Kerry Washington. I enjoyed watching the two stars. I thought that the actual series itself was fairly familiar and melodramatic, but I like watching the two stars in their comfort zones enough that I've seen five episodes and I will definitely see it through to the end.
There you go. Okay. Another text from 773 says, is American Horror Story returning?
I mean, this, look, the question is ... returning at this point is up in the air for almost literally everything.
Yeah.
So on a purely basic level, yes, it's absolutely returning. It will be back someday. They've already started doing some of the casting for the new season, and it was surely at some point going to be back in October as usual. But at this moment, who can make presumptions regarding when they're actually going to be able to produce that series and when it's going to be able to premiere? So right. Is it coming back? The answer is at some point, absolutely, American Horror Story is coming back. When? Let's just cross our fingers and hope that things return to something resembling normal soon enough that it can still return in October.
Okay.
Knock on wood.
Yeah. We're all hoping everything can return to normal at some point.
Exactly.
Okay. The plot against America. Let's talk about that. David Simon, if were up to me, I would put David Simon in charge of all of television. That would just that's what I would do.
I don't know that he works fast enough for that to be all that effective.
Yeah, right.
He is a fairly deliberate person. He is not one of those Greg Berlanti types who can produce 25 shows at once. David Simon, he has to do everything at his own pace. And in this case, Plot Against America, which premiered on Monday, is his adaptation of Philip Roth's 2004 novel about an alternate American history in which Charles Lindbergh ran for president on an isolationist political platform of keeping America out of World War II while also coddling Hitler and the Nazis, and was somehow elected president, and his presidency set off a wave of, in this alt past, anti-Semitic tensions and then violence. So it is a harrowing TV show to watch. I found it effectively unpleasant. I found it artistically unpleasant, but it definitely is a show that gets a knot in the pit of your stomach and just keeps tightening it over six episodes. It is a six episode limited series.
Yeah. I watched the first episode. I thought it was great. It's heavy, obviously, but I think worth watching.
I agree completely, but yes, it is definitely heavy, and guess what? Spoiler alert, it's only going to get heavier. That is just where it goes. And, this was a Philip Roth novel that played one way when it came out 16 years ago, and a lot of the resonances and symbolic weight has gone in a different direction and become sort of obviously directed at certain things that some people might feel is happening in Washington in our country today. And that makes it increasingly tough to watch. It always would have been tough to watch, but it's a real tough show, and I like a ton of the cast. It's got a lot of big names, including Winona Ryder and John Turturro. It's got some sort of middle-range names who people maybe should know, like Zoe Kazan and Morgan Spector. It's got a bunch of really good young actors. It's just a really good-looking, well-produced show with lots of tough-to-watch moments.
Yeah, and that's saying it. That's absolutely true. So Dan Feinberg is with us here on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. If you have a question about television or a certain show, I'd be happy to help you out. Westworld Season 3, you did a review of that. I don't understand what's happening on that show at all. I find it vaguely incomprehensible, but people are watching it. So season three, what about it?
Well, definitely the second season was beyond vaguely incomprehensible.
Yeah.
I could not tell you anything that happened in the second season, honestly. Like, like, I remember that at some point, evil star Katja Herbers was there. I definitely remember that was a thing that happened because I like her.
Yep.
I'm sure there were a lot of people wandering around naked and subterranean things, shooting at each other, and it sometimes didn't matter because most of them were robots and whatever.
That's how I feel about the show. I continue to watch it, but I just don't know what the hell's going on.
It is a show that takes its complexity extremely seriously and probably overplays its complexity because I don't think it's really as perceptive as it thinks it is about, I don't know, destiny or human nature or data mining. The second season was all about data mining. It was like, whatever you think the second season was about, it was really just 100% about data mining. The third season, though, at least somewhat opens the story up. The first episode, which premiered last weekend, introduced a major new character played by Aaron Paul, who is always good in things. And the thing that I found most interesting about the new character played by Aaron Paul is not just that he shares the same name with a key character from the OC, namely Caleb Nichols, but that he's a character who exists in the regular world, such as this futuristic world can be regular.
Yeah.
He is a person who under no circumstances ever could have afforded to go to Westworld, who doesn't have the technological acumen to have actually worked for Westworld. At least so far as we know, he appears to be a human and not a robot, though that's the great thing about Westworld is you literally never know. He's actually just a human. And I found that very, very interesting. Of course, naturally, he's very quickly brought into all of the stuff happening with Dolores, who, if you remember anything about the second season, you remember that she's the character played by Evan Rachel Wood, escaped Westworld, got out into the world, and is bent on revenge against humanity. Now, I don't think that there's any evidence in Westworld that humanity is particularly worth saving, but that doesn't mean I necessarily need to root for a killer robot. So that leaves me in a somewhat in-between place where it's really hard for me to attach my sympathies within the show. But I appreciated the attempt to reboot the first episode, and then the second and third episodes go largely back to the series that it was last season. So either that will be a good thing for people if they feel like they really just wanted more of the people in the park and people wandering around naked in subterranean computer labs. Let me assure you, there's some of that in episode two. So, yay! Yeah, it's a show that wears me out a little, and it's a show that I like so much about. I love all the actors. And many of them are great. Evan Rachel Wood is just wonderful.
Yeah.
And it's a show that is so polished and so well-made, and the special effects are so good, and I care absolutely nothing about anything that's happening, and that's a problem.
You know, it's funny that, I mean, I love Evan Rachel Wood. I love her. And I have a sneaking suspicion that she's one of the singers on The Masked Singer.
I think I've heard that theory, though it's possible I've heard it from you. It just seems like, I don't know, it doesn't seem on brand for her, but because she takes her image fairly seriously, which is part of why she's such a good fit for the show. I have a hard time imagining backstage at this show, Sarah Palin sitting on one couch and Evan Rachel Wood sitting on the other, and that being a civil situation. That would be why I would be skeptical, which means absolutely nothing. It could totally be her.
Yeah, I really think it is. I can't remember what character she is. I don't know. I can't remember what character she is. But I was like, I think that's Evan Rachel Wood. Because you know how they put, you don't watch the show, obviously, anymore. But you know how they put those clue packages together?
Sure.
There were so many hints that it was her that, I don't know. So I actually think it's her. I really do. So
I will keep checking when the Fox press releases hit my email inbox telling me who was eliminated each week.
Yeah.
So that's the only way I know these things. That and that the Sarah Palin clip was everywhere.
It was. Okay, Dan Feinberg is here, Nick DiGilio, and we're talking TV. 312-981-7200. If you have a TV related question or comment, talk or text 312-981-7200. that was a big hit. I can't remember the artist. Who is that?
Nicolette Larson.
Oh, Nicolette Larson. That's right. Yeah, that was a big hit. All right. It's Thursday.
I love a good Thursday.
I like Thursday. You know why I like Thursday?
Why do you like Thursday?
Because Better Things is on tonight.
Well, there you go.
Speaking of Better Things, Dan Feinberg is with us from The Hollywood Reporter. And you spoke with Pamela Adlon.
She's just a lot of fun. Yeah. I like Pamela Adlon. She's good people, and she's one of those people who, honestly, the best people to talk to are the people who have had long careers before they become successful.
Yeah.
Because they've gotten beaten up, and they've had ups, they've had downs, they have a pretty good perspective on where they've actually come to be. And she's also just genuinely fascinating. So, yeah, she was a guest on the podcast I do with Leslie Goldberg at Hollywood Reporter, which is TV's top five podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just very smart, very composed, and she's so passionate about what she's getting the chance to do. She is, for example, an utter geek about the directing she gets to do. And, you know, she was so excited this season that she got to use a split diopter multiple times. And that's the kind of thing where only directing nerds and Brian De Palma fans, who are also directing nerds, would be amused by. But she was just so giddy about getting to use this piece of technology. And she's so giddy about all of the things that she's getting to do. And it shows up in the show where you just watch her, and it just, she's having so much fun. She's, even when she's doing the things that are obvious, you know, she likes to cook. So guess what? She keeps cooking on the show.
Yep.
Why the heck not?
Right.
It's just one thing after another where she's just having so much fun, and it's just great to watch.
It's Better Things is just great. It's one of the best shows on TV, and I love Pamela Adlon so much. Apparently, I don't watch This Is Us, but apparently she was on This Is Us last week.
Yes, she has done multiple weeks as Randall's psychiatrist, and she's been very good. It's a small part, but it's a part that she invests with her personality, and I was happy when she popped up, because I believe her first episode, they mostly don't show her face, so it's just the cameras on Sterling K. Brown, who is always spectacular on that show, and so you just hear her voice, and she's got such a distinctive voice, and so, you know, that raspy,
yep,
aged, weathered voice she has, which is so funny that most people probably know her voice as Bobby Hill from King of the Hill.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, it's a good little cameo part, and I am all for anybody employing Pamela Adlon to whatever degree she wants to be employed beyond Better Things.
Yeah, she's great, and this season of Better Things is great. It's just the all of the acting in it is just fantastic, and the girls have gotten even better. The three daughters have gotten even better in this season.
I just think she has such a good idea of, at this point, how to use them and what they can actually do. So she really doesn't ask those three young actresses to do things they can't do. And they've, as a result, been able to show off a surprising amount of versatility, because they're asked to do things they're talented at, which should be the kind of thing that any smart showrunner, writer, director should aim to do. She just does it very well.
Yeah. Yeah, great stuff. If you're not watching Better Things, you should. It's on tonight on FX, and it's just as good as ever. And I just love how, you know, one of the things I love about that show is just how loose it is, you know, because the first scene in last week's episode was just her out with the girls, you know, eating and having a drink, and it was just laid back and funny. And then it became about something else. And then, you know, the scene at the store with the lost boy. I loved that scene, and their reaction. You know, and their reaction, her daughter and her reaction to the people who did nothing. I just thought was great.
No, it is that's sort of the illusion of what she does so well, is that it looks like it's completely casual and just happening, but you see how well everything comes together And it just comes together beautifully almost every episode, and that's because it's really not as haphazard as maybe it looks sometimes. It's just she's got this incredible looseness, and you know, there are moments in her direction and in the way the show is built that feel Altman-esque, I would say. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a love of humanity, a love of giving people room to breathe, and it, you know, it's not something that most people can do. I believe the episode that's airing tomorrow night is the fourth episode of the season. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's got my favorite scene of the season so far, and a scene that we discussed in great depth in the podcast interview, and it contains a lot of swearing that I definitely cannot say on the radio.
Okay. All right. So is there no? I mean, you know, FX they're dropping F bombs all over the place now. So I mean, is it now the FCC just saying, yeah, say whatever you want?
The FCC has never been, basically because it's not broadcast. The FCC has never been a genuine concern. It's always been a gentleman's agreement. The only key is whether episodes are rated properly, but you can say whatever you want. There's just been a gradual progression over the years on FX of the loosening of the boundaries. So there were long periods where shows might get an F-bomb basically every season if they wanted it, or every few episodes. And The Americans, for example, had a couple wonderfully timed uses of the F word, but it's gotten to the point now where they really just don't care. Yeah. Well, yeah, mostly they don't care. And so you will see in this fourth episode that there are words that are used that you just didn't used to be able to use in basic cable, and now apparently no one cares, which
exactly.
Is just fine.
I remember my reaction while I was watching the O.J. Simpson miniseries.
Yes.
And at the end of one episode, Sarah Paulson dropped the F-bomb, and I went, what? I remember like sitting on my couch just going, did she just drop the F-bomb on FX? And that was the first time that I remember seeing or hearing that word used, you know, like on basic cable.
And that was one of the times when basically FX would say, you can use these words, but only sparingly. And so that was a wonderful use of the word. Now everyone in the space has begun to loosen those boundaries. Mr. Robot, when it started, had occasional swearing in it, and then by the end it was pretty much like a drunken sailor. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously your premium cable networks, your HBOs and Showtimes have never had that problem.
Right.
But at this point, once a show is a 10 o'clock or even sometimes occasionally a 9 o'clock show on basic cable, you gotta check it at the beginning of the episode, and if it says it's TVMA, that probably means people are going to be doing some swearing.
Yeah, no question about it. Hey, speaking of FX, have you seen any of What We Do in the Shadows new season?
I have not seen any of that, though those screeners ought to be coming soon, because that's one where it actually is in the can, as opposed to, we mentioned American Horror Story earlier. Also, FX announced this week that the new season of Fargo, which, you know, people are champing at the bit to get to and have been for 2 years now, is going to be delayed probably until the winter because they were still in production on that and production had to be halted. So it's one of those that's going to be delayed and thus not in the Emmy conversation, unfortunately, which I think FX had really, really wanted it to be there for.
Yeah. Well, we were a buzz here in the city while they were shooting here. It was a lot of fun to see them, you know, dress up the neighborhoods to make it look like a different time period and all that stuff. And I had friends who lived in certain neighborhoods where they were shooting. And it's always a lot. I mean, it's not like we don't have a lot of shows being filmed, shot here in Chicago. But something about Fargo made it a little more special.
There's a large gap between what the Dick Wolf shows do, where it's just contemporary Chicago as contemporary Chicago, and the level of scale that Noah Hawley mounts on Fargo, and this season in particular, because it's set in the 1950s, is heavy on the period details. So I can definitely imagine they were dressing up neighborhoods, bringing in the old timey cars and all of that fun stuff.
Yeah, it must have been fun. No, it was a blast. It was a blast to see how they transformed a bunch of different neighborhoods in the city. And Chris Rock walking around in Chicago is always a lot of fun. So that was cool. But now that's being delayed though, right? As you said, because they were in production when.
Yeah, that is being delayed. They're saying fall now or late fall now, and who knows? And FX is in a kind of strange position there because they had Fargo set up as the big spring Emmy contender, and then they had the new Monica Lewinsky, Bill Clinton, American crime story season that was supposed to be for the fall, and then it got delayed. So a lot of the kind of bigger ticket items are being pushed for various reasons. Not that FX has any lack of programming.
Right. True. Okay. All right. Dan Feinberg is here, and we're talking TV. 312-981-7200 is the phone number on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. After 1 o'clock, we're going to be talking with Raleigh James. She's a broadcaster, hosted been on talk radio, and she also is a trucking expert, knows everything about the world of trucking, which we've been talking about this morning. And we're going to continue and get her expertise and talk about that. And we're encouraging people to call in and talk about their experiences on the road. That'll be coming up after 1. Also, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Dan Feinberg joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV, TV critic from The Hollywood Reporter. And Dan, we're talking TV. There's always a lot of TV to talk about.
Always, and, you know, even in these uncertain times, at least for now, there's definitely still plenty of TV to talk about.
Absolutely. And let's talk about Feel Good.
Yes, Feel Good is, and this should be a warning, not necessarily a show that will make you feel all that good.
Okay.
It is an important thing to warn people about, but it is also a very good show. So that is a trade-off we have to make. It is, the show I'm comparing it to is Amazon's Catastrophe, which, if people haven't seen Catastrophe, it's on Amazon, stars Sharon Horgan and Rob Delaney, and you really should watch it because it's spectacular, and 4 great seasons of that. And it is created by Mae Martin, who is a Canadian writer and stand-up comic whose credits were all basically writing credits. She wrote on the Canadian sketch show, Baroness Von Sketch Show. That's basically what her credits are. She stars as something resembling a version of herself, as a Canadian stand-up comic working in London who falls in love with a woman named George, and George has been straight her whole life, and this is her first gay relationship, and so there's uncertainty there. She doesn't, for example, want to tell her parents just yet. And May has her own uncertainty because she's a recovering drug addict and has other various demons from her past. And so this complicates their relationship. And George is played by Charlotte Ritchie, who some people will know from Call the Midwife, and she's very good. And Mae Martin's just wonderful. She is a total discovery, revelation, whatever word you choose, for someone whose job in the past had mostly been writing and not acting. She's a great actress and is really good as May, the TV character, becomes more and more vulnerable, more and more strung out, more and more uncertain in her place in the world. She's great with Charlotte Ritchie. She's great with Lisa Kudrow, who plays her mother. It's only 6 episodes. They're all less than 25 minutes. They are on Netflix tomorrow, today, whatever Thursday is.
Today.
I always get confused on time zones. So today.
Yeah,
there
today.
We are. It's, in fact, perhaps, no, I guess it'll be up in a couple hours on Netflix then. Right. So, yeah, it's really good. It's kind of a rom-com, except that it's not hugely funny, though it definitely has funny beats. It's romantic at times. It's dark at times. These are characters who have some real issues. But it's just really satisfying, and the acting is really good, and the voice is really in place. It is a fully realized, immediately, storytelling voice, and really remarkable given that this is the first show that Mae Martin has created and starred in. So it's definitely worth checking out. It's a lot like a lot of those kind of genre-bending British shows. Some people might want to compare it to Fleabag. I don't think it's really all that Fleabaggy, and also maybe that raises the bar too high. Probably Catastrophe does as well, but it's in that vein where you don't exactly know what the tone is at any particular moment, but it just goes by really well, and it's easy to be interested in these characters and embrace these characters. So that's Feel Good on Netflix, and it's a really solid show that's worth watching.
That's great. Is it wrong for me to feel really old that Lisa Kudrow is playing the parent of someone who's in their 30s?
It's definitely, it's a step. So you figure, wasn't she also the parent in Booksmart?
Yes, she was. Yes, her and Will Forte were the parents of Booksmart.
So it feels like kind of a slight leap generationally, because no one had any problems with the idea of them as parents to Caitlin Dever, but maybe this does feel like a stretch, and there are times when I'm not exactly sure that the show is clear on how old Lisa Kudrow is, or maybe there are times I'm not sure that I'm exactly clear on how old Lisa Kudrow is, but she's completely convincing, and she plays the main character's mother, and they've got a very strained relationship because of the time when May, the character, was a drug addict, and so it's an interesting and different kind of relationship to see, and Lisa Kudrow is really good. She gets a couple laughs when she wants to, but really does not play it for broad comedy.
Yeah.
It's just a really good character acting performance.
I'm a big fan of Lisa Kudrow. Always have been. So, all right. So that's on Netflix, and it will be streaming today at some point.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Tell me about 000.
000, which premiered, I have no clue anymore if it was last weekend or the weekend before on Amazon, and it is the latest attempt to chronicle the drug industry, this being the illegal narcotics industry and not the pharmaceutical industry, on a multi-tier level. So to some degree in the traffic vein of, okay, let's look at it in terms of distribution, production, consumption, et cetera, et cetera. So in this case, it is an international co-production, and one segment of the story is set in Italy with the large Italian drug cartel. Another segment is set in Monterrey, Mexico, around the basically drug production and basic distribution business. And then for American audiences, what's closest to the hook is another segment is set starting in the docks of New Orleans and then going out on shipping barges with the American shipping family that's basically bringing the drugs between Mexico and Italy. And the Americans in question are played by Gabriel Byrne, Dane DeHaan, and Andrea Riseborough. And then there are a bunch of other very fine Italian and Mexican actors who I honestly have seen maybe one or two of them other places.
Yeah.
It doesn't work entirely because it's just so very familiar, because at this point I've just seen so many variations on this, whether it's Traffic, as I mentioned, or Narcos, or Breaking Bad in certain moments, Better Call Saul also. So it's hard for it to stand out in that respect.
Yeah.
But the thing I really appreciated about it is that it was shot largely on international locations. So not just parts of it are shot in Calabria in Italy and in Monterey and in New Orleans, but there are large chunks of it that are shot in Senegal which I thought was very interesting, and shipping ports there. There's a lot of the story that's set in Casablanca at the shipping ports there. And I just, it's a great looking show. You get so much value out of shooting internationally on location. And even when I was not finding anything particularly revelatory in the story, I just liked spending time in this world. Yeah. And so, yeah, that kept me watching.
Okay. That's 000 on Amazon. Are you watching Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist?
Of course, I certainly am.
God, I love that show.
Because last week Jane Levy ate multiple pigs in blankets and attempted to smile, yes. And it was one of my favorite moments on TV of the week. Yeah. And when I requested a GIF of it, the creator of the show sent me one immediately.
Oh, so that's awesome.
That's asked awesome. And answered.
I love Jane Levy. Always have. I mean, I just think she's great. And that's a show that if you're not watching, especially during this really stressful and scary time, it's just joy. I watch that show and it just makes me happy. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I love it.
No, it's a show. That's in fact exactly the right description and exactly the right way to be positioning the show in this particular moment. Is that it really is it's a show with a fair amount of warm fuzziness in a landscape in which we can probably all need 44 warm fuzzy moments.
Exactly. Exactly. I can't recommend it. You know, if for everyone who's out there who's not seen it, you can catch up with it on demand. And like I said, especially at this time, and how scary and weird and stressful it is, it's an hour that's just going to take your mind off of what's happening in the world, and you're going to feel good. And I think that's a big thing. I think that's important.
Except for when it wants to make you feel a little bit sad, or
yeah.
When wants you to feel a little bit romantic, but it's a show that has that very broadly wears its emotions on its sleeve,
yep.
And maybe there are some times in which I would feel more critical about it and feel as if it was less vital and less necessary, but I think in this particular moment it has a disproportionate amount of value.
I agree. That's Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. It's on NBC, and it's I love it. So, Dan, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you the next time.
Same to you and yours. Be
okay.
Safe.
Okay, buddy. Take care. Dan Feinberg, always talking about TV. A lot of fun. Hollywood reporter. You can check him out at The Fine Print, FIEN. Raleigh James is going to join us after 1 o'clock. We're going to talk about the trucking industry and more on 720 WGN.